Hey everybody, my name is Brad Bauman and I'm an alcoholic. I am 35 days new to these rooms in this program. It's an honor to be here. About 30 days ago, I think, I had the honor of meeting this gentleman right here and have had the pleasure of speaking with him every day since then. He's become my sponsor and I'm grateful for that. Every time I get together with him, he gives me enlightenment. Every single time I meet with him, he just spins my head and drops my jaw. So with that, I'm going to introduce Chris Wirt.
Spins his head and drops his jaw.
Wow. My name's Chris Wirt. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
My sobriety date is August 13th of 2006. For that, I am eternally grateful. Oh, look at this. Thank you. I am here 5 minutes and I knocked my coffee over. Like a newcomer, right? Newcomers can't let them have coffee. They'll spill it everywhere. So, my home group is the We Are Not a Glumlock group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know if anybody was there last night. We had Lindsay Michaud come speak, and some of y'all know Lindsay. Powerful. It was wonderful. What a wonderful thing Alcoholics Anonymous is. I mean, there was probably close to 300 people packed into that room, and not a soul got up. You know it's a good talk if you got that many, and half the people in there were from halfway houses and newer than Brad, and they didn't get up. You know it's a good story. So it's going to be tough to follow that, but I'll do my best. Thank you, Jerry, for asking me to come. I appreciate it on the last minute. Josh was just telling me before the meeting that within the last year, there's been somebody have a heart attack from behind this podium and somebody pass out. Mm-hmm. I thought, God, do I want to go up there? Is there still time to run, maybe? You know, alcoholics, we love to run, don't we? We're good at running. And one of the wonderful things I think that Alcoholics Anonymous allows a guy like me to do today is stay. You know, in my home group, when we pray, we line up in a circle and we hold hands and we say the Lord's Prayer. And I don't know about anybody else in here, but I never liked the chanting. I never liked to keep coming back. It works if you work it. Yeah, cultish, strange. I come into A and I'm uncomfortable anyway. I don't understand you people. I'm skeptical to the core. I'm cynical. I'm fatally cynical. And you people get in a circle and hold hands and chant. That's just too much. You know, my mom raised me right. I know how to sit in a meeting and comport myself and behave myself. And thank you, Fred, for sharing. That was great. I just want to push him out of his chair. But I behave myself. And then you guys want me to hold hands and chant. It's good. So at our group, we just say, stay. And I loved it. And my first home group, by the way, if you're going to get and stay sober and you're a real alcoholic, this is my experience, you better get a home group. I've never seen, I don't think, anybody that I believe to be a real alcoholic that actually got sober and stayed sober who didn't have a home group. Now, can you do it without one? Maybe. But why would you want to take that chance? You know, do everything in here. So my first real home group. Because I was a runner. I never stayed. I was always that tap dancer. There's a guy named Ernie Larson. Some of y'all may be familiar with him. Wonderful author. He describes alcoholics in different ways, and he calls one of the types of alcoholics a tap dancer. I've always got 1 foot over here and 1 foot over here. I never put both feet in the same place at one time. Make sense? Commitment. I don't care how you... Thank you, Jerry, for giving me that email, by the way, to remind me to try and not cuss, and I'm going to do my best. Jackie, look here. Jackie's going, oh, God. But I don't care how you spell the word commitment. That's a four-letter word, baby, for a guy like me. I will not put both feet in the same place at the same time. I've always got to have a back-out plan, baby. If the going gets tough, I'm out. Got to go. So my first home group, though, was very attractive to me. My first sponsor and his wife had both been in the program a long time. And at their home group, it was a group called Sober is Great. And his name was Gary Harbin. His wife's name was Judy Harbin. And at Sober's great group of Alcoholics Anonymous, they still meet on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock at Peachtree Presbyterian Church. At that meeting, and I just loved this, and I'd never been there before, my first time, Judy took us out in prayer. And I got up to start circling up. And Judy said, she said, here at Sober is Great, we just stay seated and say a reverent prayer to those who prayed us into these rooms in the past. We just bow our heads and pray. Nice. No chanting? I love it. That was attractive to me. Now, a lot of people like the chanting. I've talked to lots of people. They say, it feels great. I love being, not me. And the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is we can all have different stories coming in here. But in principle, you get right down to the nitty gritty, they're all the same. If you're like me. So that was, and you know, I fell in with that group, and a little about me. That group was what I call kind of like, they were pretty fundamental, kind of old school AA. At the Sober is Great meeting, they actually read from the original manuscript. That's kind of how old school they were, right? And Helen over at Central Office, anybody know Helen? She didn't like that a bit. My first sponsor in Helen, boom, 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 boy, they butted heads a lot. And it was kind of neat, though. I was very newly sober and coming in and out of AA for 13 years before I could get sober. That's a long time. You know, the first 10 of those years was hardly here at all, though. It was 90% out. I could only stand you people for about 3 meetings. That's about all I could take. Alcoholism's burning my backside up. I got to get out of this chair. I don't understand you people. You people talk funny. I'm itching. That thing inside of me is getting tight. It's getting tight. I can't breathe. I'm suffocating in this place. I gotta go. And boy, I take one drink. Oh. What was I doing going to AA? I'm making too much out of this deal here. If I can just stop drinking, slow down, maybe just cut it way back, I'm gonna be okay. I don't need to do what Jerry Sinatra does. Connect to a power greater than myself. Whoa, slow down. You people, you talk funny. You remember Charlie Brown? Remember the substitute teacher talk? Wah, 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 wah. That's what you people sound like to me for a long time. And I come in, and so I was very familiar with what you do in AA. Now, I went to public school like the next guy, right? And I went to college, too. State school, but it was college. You know, I'm a real educated brand of alcoholic. Now, only very recently in my life have I ever started to become smart. I was educated and dumber than a box of rocks. You know, there were people that had never seen a schoolhouse that were smarter than me. You know, I used to look at those people and think, because I'm so educated and intelligent and ebullient, and I can speak well. Why do I drink and smoke crack to oblivion? Why? I was speaking with somebody earlier, Steve. I think that might be the one word for me that screwed me most of my life. Why? I always want to know why. Why this? Why that? Why do they do this? Why does this happen? Why does that happen? And I'll why myself into a knot that's so tight that I can't undo. And the only thing in my entire life that I've ever known that will loosen that knot is a drink or two. I gotta take it. I don't want to take it. At some point in my life, I started becoming convinced that if I took it, it was going to be ugly. But I can't not take it. I gotta have it because I gotta breathe. And I take it and I start to unwind. I mean, until I got sober, I would read stuff. There wasn't a philosophy in the world that could touch a drink or two. There wasn't a church in the world that could touch a drink or two. There wasn't a woman in the world that could touch a drink or two. There wasn't enough money in the world that could do for me what a drink or two did, guaranteed every single time. The money might work for a little bit. The woman might work for a little bit. But they eventually fail. And I know in the back of my mind and in my gut of guts and in my heart of hearts, I know what will work for sure. And I'm doomed to go back to it every single time. And so, you know, I'm very educated in AA. I know what to do. You know, come on now. You don't have to have but about a fifth grade education to read that book and know what's going on. Now, catch hell trying to get an alcoholic to actually do it, though. You know what I mean? We're stubborn. You know, I'll go to my grave before I'll do this stuff. And, but I saw my first sponsor. I was maybe a month sober, you know, and I was very fortunate to meet up with a group of people who got down to business right away. You know, got down to business right away. As the earliest members of Alcoholics Anonymous got down to business right away. You know, I'd heard a lot of things in AA, you know, hey buddy, think you can do 90 meetings in 90 days? And if I'm sufficiently whooped, if I burned every bridge behind me, and I burned a bunch of them in front of me, alcoholics are the only people that burn bridges in front of them, baby. If I've done it enough, guess what I'll answer that question? Guess what the question to that answer will be? Yes. You know it. I'm never going to be able to do that. Because I'm so full of you know what, it's coming out of my ears. And I can't help but being full of you know what, that is so much that is coming out of my ears. I have alcoholism. I cannot. Lack of power is my dilemma. I'm telling you, almost 11 years sober now, that one sentence in the big book is taking on new and deeper meaning for me in my entire life. Did I get that lack of power was my dilemma on August 13th of 2006? Yes and no. I got it right here. And I got it right here a little bit. But I didn't quite get it here yet. See? That's one of the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous. It connects me to a power greater than myself that allows me to meet God here and here, but not here. If you leave it up to me to try to do something for myself here, oh boy. It's going to be ugly. You know, a friend of mine says, and I love it because it describes me. He says, my best piece of advice for you, if I'm not sober, he said, and you see me with a drink or a drug in my hand, he says, my best piece of advice for you is to run for your life because I'm coming after you. He said, I'm going to do whatever I think I have to do to get whatever I think I need or want from you. And the more desperate my internal and external situation is, the more desperate measures I'll take to get that from you. And I'll do whatever I have to do, and I'll shove you in the ditch and go to the next person. And to some extent, I won't even realize what's happening. I won't even know I'm doing it. And I may realize I'm doing it, and lack of power is my dilemma. I can't stop myself from doing it. I can't tell you how many times in my life I experienced out-of-body experiences. I would watch myself doing things I couldn't believe I was doing. Taking a damn ice, what do you call the scoop? An ice scoop? Yeah. And digging change out of my dad's change jar to go to the Coinstar, cash it in, and go see, not go to the liquor store, but meet the guy behind the liquor store. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Anybody ever met the guy behind the liquor store?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm an equal opportunity alcoholic, right? I got two drugs of no choice. I don't have drugs of choice. A drug of choice implies that I can choose to use that substance or not. And my big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and my experience collude and tell me that I have no choice. My choice today is to seek God with the desperation of a drowning man or not. I can't choose to drink. Or not. So I have drugs of no choice. And my two drugs of no choice, number one is more. Anybody know about more? I see some heads shaking out there. Once I start, I have virtually no control over the amount I take. More, baby. All right? Now my drug of no choice number two is yours. Because I'm going to do all of mine, and whatever I have to do Jerry's too. Jerry, what you got? I'll do Jerry's drug even if I don't like it. Anybody ever done a drug they didn't even like?
Yeah.
Well, what the hell is the point? What the heck is the point? With me, I remember once I was sitting in one of these houses of ill repute. We talk about in the big book, it talks about places we go. Dirty, nasty bars. Who loved a dirty, nasty dive bar? This guy right here. Now, see, I was either at the Tavern at Phipps. Why, absolutely, I'll have a Manhattan. Or I'm at the Last Great Watering Hole in Tucker doing a rail of cocaine off the bar and having some wench bring me some rock gut vodka. I'm one or the other. There's no in-between for a guy like me. Anybody else get on board with that? God, moderation? That's a four-letter word. You know? Oh, yuck. Who likes moderation? You know, so there's no middle of the road for me. Once I start, I can't stop. You know? Again, let me say, I am so... Words, Lindsay was kind of hit on this last night. Words cannot do justice for the change that has occurred inside of me. But Jerry asked me to come up here, and I'm a human being. And I'm going to have to use what? Words. They're going to fall short. I'm doing the best I can. Words cannot describe the change that has happened inside of me. Ah, and I just lost track where I was going. Kids, don't do drugs. Don't do them. They will catch up with you. Anybody ever tried that marijuana maintenance program before? Come on now, be honest. There's no video cameras, it's just a recorder. Anybody ever tried to smoke that non-habit forming marijuana? Right? I did for years, every day. But you know, if I'm not drinking, guess what I gotta have? Something. I gotta have something. You know what I mean? And those somethings took various forms throughout my life. And they often took the form of a woman. Because, you know, the pleasure center in my brain needs ding, 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 right? And if I'm denying my brain my number one ding, 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 it will demand my number two ding, ding, ding. And the number two will suffice for a while. But then my brain says, hey, Chris, thanks for giving me that number two for a while, but can I get some of that number one? And you know, of course I don't know this is happening. You know, we take hostages. Anybody ever here taking a hostage for the opposite sex? Yeah, we wouldn't be sitting here if we didn't. Are we in a museum for saints or what? Are we sitting in an AA meeting? Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholism is so much more than drinking. It is horrific, fatal, dysfunctional behavior. But what we know is the drink. So, I about at 26, at 25 I hit a crossroads in my life. Anybody ever been there before? You hit that proverbial, let's go this way or go that way. I hit that when I was about 25. I said, you know what? And by 25, I went to my first AA meeting at the age of 22 years old. Voluntarily. Walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous at 22 years of age. Now, I don't know. Something's gone horribly wrong in life, and it's gone wrong fast. If I'm voluntarily walking into places like this. You know what I mean? So by the time I was 25... I had already started to have a thorough education in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I already kind of knew the basics of what you guys do, and I didn't like it, and I didn't have to do it, because I drink like you people, right? My mind would come to an AA meeting, and I'd hear people say, oh, I didn't mean to, I just wanted to go have one or two at the bar after work, and it was 4 a.m, and I'm throwing up down the side of my car trying to get home. I'm thinking, sure, I do that. I drink like that. Uh-oh. You know, I drink like you people, but I'm not like you people. Because you people say that you're like outright mentally defective. These people. You know, well, I have a spiritual illness.
What? Not me. I just drink too much. And if I believe I just drink too much, there's a real simple solution for that, isn't there? Come on, what is it? Just don't drink. Come on now. No matter what. Just don't drink, no matter what. And guess what I heard in AA meetings for years? Just don't drink, no matter what. Interesting. If your backside falls off, put it in a wheelbarrow and bring it to a meeting. When my backside falls off, I don't come to a meeting. I meet the guy behind the liquor store. So, doesn't work for a guy like me, just not drinking. Works real well for non-alcoholic people. Works real well. Just don't drink no matter what works real well for non-alcoholic people. And see, this is what my mind would say, just don't drink no matter what. Well, if that's what AA is all about, why am I coming here? I can just don't drink out there. Why am I going to come spend my time with people like Brad? He's got long hair and a beard, and he kind of looks like a dirty hippie. I think I'm better than him. I'm certainly more intelligent than him, and certainly better looking. So I think I'm just going to not drink out there. And I leave. Right? I went to a young person's meeting a long time ago at Skyland. 1994, maybe. Long time ago. And a gentleman named John Shires. Some of y'all know John? The big, goofy son of a bleep. You know what I mean? I love him. He's a handful, though. You know, I always wondered about John Shires. Way before I would get sober, I'd think, that big goofy guy, he's not an alcoholic. No way, he can't be like me. Because he claimed, at the time I met him, he'd been sober about 2 years maybe. Year and a half, 2 years. And he claimed that he hadn't had a drink or a drug in 2 years, and he was happy. No way, impossible. It is impossible to not drink and be happy about it. So he can't be like me. No way. So we were at this young person's meeting, and it split. If you've ever been to Skyland, it's a pretty big room there. So it split. I swear to God this happened. They split the room in half, and one half of the room stood on the wall here, and the other half stood on that wall, and they started chanting in the middle of the meeting. One side of the room said, "Just don't drink!" And the other side went, "No matter what!" And they went back and forth. Back and forth. And I'm standing there going, I'm in the wrong place. This is not for me. Oh God, I gotta go. So I left. I walked out. And here might have been a little bit of God doing something for me, but I couldn't do for myself long before I realized it. John Shires, after the meeting, came out there in the parking lot. He saw me walk out with about 5-10 minutes left in the meeting. And I thought, oh, there's that big goofy. He better not come talk to me. Anybody ever sat out in the parking lot mean mugging people? Anybody ever been out there going, hey man, just, you know, stay away from me. So that's what I was doing to John Shires. But you know John, some of y'all know John. That don't stop John. John's coming at me like this. You know? And he's got this big goofy tie on that has LED lights surrounding the rim of the tie, and they're blinking. He's like, I don't drink it. I'm happy about it. He's coming for me. And he gets about as close as I am to me and Jerry. And I said, John Shires, stop. John, stop. Don't come any closer to me, John. And I use language that I'm going to clean up right here. I said, you big goofy fill in the blank. If you touch me, I will kick your backside all over this parking lot. Buddy, I'm telling you the truth. Don't touch me. Because John Shires, he'd get you in a headlock, and give you noogies, and just don't drink. Don't touch me, John. You'll regret it. John, you'll regret it. Don't touch me. And I meant it. My body language matched up. My words matched up. And John stopped. He stopped for a second. He didn't quite know what to do with that, right? And there were people watching. So John turned around and went, look at this guy. I thought, I'm in the wrong place. AA's not for a guy like me. So I left. Now, I always wonder whether John Shires was an alcoholic or not. And when I did get sober in 06, I met up. I hadn't seen John much. And I join up with Fifth Tradition group. It was about 5 or 6 months old at the time. And John Shires. I'm like, look at that big, goofy guy still sober. And I'm still wondering, is he really an alcoholic? I don't know. Strange ways our minds work. I have a spiritual illness that will go to the very bitter end and try to convince me that I don't have it. But I'm trying to figure out if somebody else does or not. And I'm doing this sober. Right? I'm 4 years sober debating whether John Shires has alcoholism or not. And here's what I know now at almost 11 years sober. Who gives a blank? I have it. I am convinced I have it. And I'm not the most Christian guy you've ever met. It's the way God makes the most sense to me. And I go with it, baby. I got one word for that. Amen. I have it. And there's a simple treatment for what I have. And it works every time. If done thoroughly, honestly, and willingly. Works every time. My success rate is 100%. If you ask me, AA's success rate is 100%. Because it worked for me one time out of one. You know, I was talking with somebody earlier, Steve, about the success rates in AA. You know, we hear a lot, you know, the preface of the second edition says there's a 75% success rate. Is that true? Sure. But it says in there, if you carefully read it, get a sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, get a competent sponsor because they will go through the book and carefully read it with you. What that says is, of those who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober immediately. And then after a few slips, 25% more got sober. See? So once I came to AA and really tried, bam, 100% success rate. Now with my guys, of the guys that I sponsor, which at any given time is about half of them, right? If you ask me how many guys I sponsor, it's about half. So, and I figured somebody's going to get that. I'm like, what am I speaking French up here? What the hell? So, my experience is of the guys that come to me and really try. 75% is a little low in my experience. Now, here again, I think I hit it on it earlier a little bit. Catch hell trying to get an alcoholic to really try. Those guys are few, and women are few and far between. Brad came up here and introduced me. Brad's been so far one of them guys. What a blessing it's been. I get to go through a spiritual way of life and show somebody else the miracle that happened to me. I know it sounds corny maybe, but God, it's true. To sit there and watch another man or woman go, oh my God, priceless. You know, priceless. If you're sitting out there and you haven't had that experience with another alcoholic yet, please be willing to have that experience with them. You got to get sober yourself first, though. I spent a lot of time in AA trying to fix everybody else before I got sober. Anybody else ever had that experience? I'd come into about 8 or 13 meetings, and I got your deal figured out. I went to college. I know what to say. I know what to say. I know how to say it. I know when to say it. And I know who to say it to. And I know how to say it to each specific person I'm looking at. I'll knock your socks off.
I'll do your dance for you, baby. Lack of power is my dilemma. Once I start, I have virtually no control over the amount I take. Blah, 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 blah. Spit out a page number, I'll start reading it off to you from memory. Now, if you don't know any better, I look good, baby. If you're new and ignorant in Alcoholics Anonymous, not stupid, ignorant, uneducated, don't know any better, I look good and I sound good and I'll fool you. Right? And I'll try to fix you when I'm not fixed myself. And, you know, and we talk about in those promises, you know, we're not supposed to regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Sometimes I look back and I regret the way I behaved. I mean, we're human beings, right? Do human beings regret the past? Absolutely. Is this program of spiritual rebirth that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, is it some high ideals? You betcha. If you're a real alcoholic, does your life depend upon you striving to reach them? You betcha. You better do the best you can, or you're in real trouble. You know, when I first got sober, I did the best I could. And I had a willing heart. If you put those two things together, if you take an alcoholic who's got a willing heart to be sober, and when I was first getting sober, I didn't even really quite realize I had a willing heart. Again, I'm telling you, competent sponsorship, he could see it in me when I couldn't see it in me. He looked at me and went, oh, man, look at that one. Hey, Bob, me and you are going to go right now. And I'm going to get to this story in just a second. What time is it? Okay, good, we're all right. I'll get sober here in a minute. But he could see it in me when I couldn't see it. But if you take an alcoholic with a willing heart and you couple that with their ability to do the best they can, boy, you're in the ball game, baby. Let's rock. Let's go. Let's get on down the road. Let's get through that window of opportunity, that window of grace. See, a guy like me has a win. There were probably a handful of times in my life before I got sober that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. He gave me a little window of opportunity. I could hear different. I could see different. What's going on with me? It was strange to me, unknown to me, but it was an opportunity for a guy like me to get sober. Now, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. But too many people in Alcoholics Anonymous patted me on the backside and told me everything was going to be okay. Do you think you can just not drink today, Chris, and come back tomorrow? Think you can do that? Yeah. No. I don't know. And I try. I try to not drink and come back tomorrow. My best efforts produce failure. I try my best to not drink and come back, but I drink anyway. Just don't drink no matter what. A guy like me, I drink no matter what. Come on, there's a disconnect here somewhere. Thank God that on August 13th of 2006, I met up with a guy and a group of people. My window was open, and they knew what to do with a guy like me. They didn't sugarcoat nothing for me. They told me the truth, you know, and I didn't often like it, but that's irrelevant. You know, the truth is the truth, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not. You know, I love this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hold it dear. And actually, this is my second edition that my dad gave me. I got a second edition. I'm going to get a first edition one day. I'm going to get one. I am a collector of pre-fourth edition big books. I got about 25 third editions, one second edition, you know. As for one thing, do I want to go there? Why not for a minute? I love pre-fourth edition big books because how dare AA? Alcoholics Anonymous, who doesn't run Alcoholics Anonymous, how dare they censor Dr. Paul's story? Dr. Alcoholic Addict, who knows about that story? What's it called today? Acceptance was the answer. How dare they censor that man's miracle? And you know why they did it? Somebody's got to have a good guess. Jackie knows you're not allowed to answer, Jackie. Because it had what word in it?
Drunk.
Addict.
So Alcoholics Anonymous freaking out because by the late 1960s, early 1970s, mid-1970s, drug addicts are flooding Alcoholics Anonymous. Treatment centers are popping up on every street corner. Insurance companies are paying out of the pocket, baby. I mean, if you ever puked at a bar, you're an alcoholic, get in the treatment. If you've ever done anything, they're just flooding people. So AA, oh God, we can't have any story with the word addict in it. So they changed Dr. Paul's story. And Amanda Magnolia Brown, some of y'all know her, wonderful woman. I think we're going to try to get her to come to Glumlot in the fall, her and her mom, to do the AA Al-Anon thing. It's wonderful. If you ever get a chance, please come. But she pointed out something to me a couple years ago that I was unaware of. That there are three stories in the fourth edition of Alcoholics Anonymous that don't even mention the word God at all. Unacceptable. Ah, some of y'all might be getting butthurt out there, but that's unacceptable. There's only one answer for the real alcoholic, and that answer is God. And that's a four-letter word to a lot of us, isn't it? It was to me. But on August 13th of 2006, it was still a four-letter word. But I had become convinced that I must have help or else. And that help's going to have to come from something bigger than me. Oh, no. I didn't like it. But it's irrelevant whether I liked it or not. So, I'm a collector of pre-fourth edition big books, and I used to be a big book snob. I would see people with fourth editions, and I would say, you need to get a third edition, or even better, a second. Why don't we read from the first? I have a reprint of it right here. I was that guy, right? Because I fell in with that group of fundamental people who read from the first edition, and even the original manuscript, right? So I was sober, but a lot of our character defects, maybe it's just me, kind of carry over into the new life, don't they? Anybody here ever experienced selfishness sober? Am I the only one? Has anybody ever experienced pride sober? Has anybody ever experienced I'm better than you sober? Come on, we're human, right? Anybody know Clancy Emmerslund? I love that old crotchety guy out in L.A. Yeah. Oh, I love him. I hated him. Because I hated your meetings for years before I could get sober. I wouldn't come to your meetings, but what I would do would get speaker tapes and play them in my car with the windows up in the air on so nobody would know what I was listening to. And the only speaker that I could ever even make it through a whole tape without having to shut that garbage off was Sandy Beach. I see some heads nodding. An angel of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had the great pleasure of getting to know Sandy Beach very well. What a wonderful man. Died in an AA meeting. He was in a newcomers meeting down there in Florida. Retired down to Florida. A pilot in the service of our country. How old was Sandy? Do you know? 87? 8 at the time? You know, he put his head down to take a nap in a meeting, which he often did. Old people take naps. You know what I mean? My dad's 73. He's like, I'll be talking to my dad in the middle of a sentence, and he'll go. So Sandy laid his head down to take a nap, and it never came up. They went to wake Sandy up after the meeting, and he was dead. He died in an AA meeting. I couldn't think of it much. If I'm going to die, I think I'd like to die in an AA meeting. That'd be wonderful. Go up to the wherever our souls go back to from whence they came, right? And say, hey, I died in an AA meeting. What a wonderful thing. Because a guy like me is usually doomed to die somewhere else than an AA meeting. What a wonderful miracle we have. But anyway, real quick, wonderful story for me. I had a sponsee. Now, I get down to business quick, which I'm going to describe here in a few minutes. But I couldn't get to him until like a day or two later. So I told him, I said, hey, buddy, read a story out of the big book. And if there's something in there that catches you, let's talk about that. I'll be there on Wednesday. So he actually did it. He called me the next day and he said, I got one sentence for you. I was like, okay. He said, planned abstinence was extremely stressful. I was like, no crap. I thought, well, we talked about that. We for a few minutes on the phone. I was like, are you kidding me? I said, that's absolutely true. I said, what story did you read that in? He said, Gutter Bravado. I said, Gutter Bravado? I know that book like the back of my hand. I'm like, Gutter Bravado. Oh, God. He has a fourth edition. Gutter Bravado. He said, you've never read that one? And we work a program of rigorous honesty, don't we? I wanted to say, well, of course I've read that one. But I said, no, I've never read that one. He said, oh, man, it's a good one. And so guess what I did? I went and found a fourth edition. Ugh, God, I'm not going to open this crap, am I? I open it up, and I read Gutter Bravado. Fantastic story. Wonderful, wonderful story. Describes a guy like me. He talks about how he snapped back to the bottle like a rubber band. He described how life gets hard. Because for a guy like me, if I'm just not drinking, but I'm not getting sober, life gets harder. The further I get away from a drink, the worse life gets. See, I start walking, you know, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I feel a little tightness right there. Oh, shit. I got to walk on through that. You know, and life starts getting hard. Idiots on the sidewalk. My boss don't show me enough respect and courtesy that I deserve, damn it. What's wrong with all these people? Why don't they act right? Come on, listen to me, people. What is wrong with you? Oh, I'm getting tight. It's getting tight. I'm taking short breaths. Shit. I can't take it at some point. And it gets so tight around here. And there I go. I snap back to the bottle like a rubber band. And I can't stop myself. I see it coming. I'm having out-of-body experiences. I'm going, oh, God, Chris, you're going to drink. Chris, you're going to drink. And there I go. Snap back to the bottle like a rubber band. I thought, huh. And then I realized when Amanda Magnolia Brown told me that there were three stories in the fourth edition that don't mention the word God at all. Guess what one of them is? Gutter Bravado! Oh, God. That day, 7 or 8 years ago, I quit being a big book snob. Do I read the fourth edition? No. Do I even own one? No. I'm no longer a big book snob, though. If you've got a fourth edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, again, I got one word for you. Amen. It's the best word I know. You know, I'm up here at the podium, Jackie. I can say whatever I want. I've known Jackie for a long time. What a wonderful woman. Love her. She just picked up 5 years last night. Yay. So, Jackie, 5 years. Oh. Look at her right over there acting all humble. She's putting on that cloak of humility we all put on, don't we? Has anybody ever done that? I know Jerry doesn't. You know, somebody says, somebody go, oh, geez. Callie G. Willikers, I don't know. Shut up. If somebody gives you a compliment that's well-earned and deserved, you know what you say? Thank you.
I did.
I know you did. Love you, Jackie. So I'm no longer a big book snob anymore. So, okay. So here's what happened to me real quick. Gary Harbin, I mentioned earlier, I ended up at a place called Peachford Communities. Anybody ever heard of this place? They've rebranded it now, Sober Living America. Ooh, it was rough. It's rough now. It was rougher then. I lived in a 3-bedroom apartment with 14 men. There were 14 of us in a 3-bedroom apartment. 2 sets of bunk beds in each bedroom and a pull-out couch in the living room that 2 gentlemen shared. A pull-out couch. You talk about getting intimate, baby. You getting to know somebody on a pull-out couch. Place was horrible. Stop. Let me stop. The place was wonderful. And this is why it was wonderful. A gentleman named Gary Harbin came there every Sunday morning and did a newcomers meeting in the office for guys like me. Destitute. Unemployable. Indigent. Smelly. Broke, angry, sick, sad,
desperate, suicidal people like me.
I'm sorry.
So the place was wonderful in my heart. Now, at the time I was there, it wasn't wonderful. Because you got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get on the van to go to the work camp. You know, because guys like me, I can't get a job. I can get a job, can't keep a job. You know, so I'm in this place, 215 men, with three men to keep track of 215 men. And 80 women at the top of the hill being watched by one woman. You tell me what was going on in there. It was off the chain, like the kids say these days. Listen to me, I'm 46. I have no idea what kids say these days. Does anybody still say off the chain? I don't know. Don't get it twisted. I don't know. So it was a wild, wild place. My orientation, the guy took me down there, and there was a guy smoking crack out of a Coke can on the back deck. Orientation. Nice. Oh my God, I thought, what kind of place is this? And you know what kind of place it was? It was the only place in town that would take me. Wait a minute, I'm college educated. I came from a good family. I was raised right. I don't belong here. And here was the miracle. Step zero was completed. Some of y'all may not know what step zero is. It's the step that precedes step one. It is the process that convinces an alcoholic like me that I must have God's help or else. Step zero was done. I didn't know it. I thought to myself, I don't belong here. And here was God doing for me what I could not do for myself long before I realized it. He went, yes, you do. And I stayed. Right? Now, no offense, it was 98% black. This is how savage my mind was and desperate my mind was, trying to convince me I didn't belong there. I have a college education. I've never met one man in here who has a college education. I came from a good family. Most of these people came from broken homes. And I'm white. That shocked me. My mind had never gone there. I wasn't raised that way. I was raised the exact opposite. But alcoholism is a savage illness that will do whatever it has to do to keep me sick and dead. I went, and I'm white. Oh my God, did I just think that? I still remembered it. It was shocking. So, I get on the van. Day two. Good Lord Almighty. Day two. I'm about a day and a half removed from my last drink and a hit off that old crack pipe. A day and a half, I'm reeling mentally, spiritually, physically, financially, in every way. I'm bankrupt in every way. But what I know is, and what I feel more than what I know is that something's different. I can't put my finger on it. And it's weird and it's strange, but something's different. So I go to this church down in Buckhead, Peachtree Presbyterian Church, up there on the fourth floor. Hallowed ground to me. There's a wonderful group that meets there now called Spearheads. Don't go there. Come to Glumlot, though, because we're just we're competing, baby. No, but that fourth floor room up there at Peachtree Pres is hallowed ground to me, because that's where I was introduced to a God that I could not understand. I was introduced to a God that I had become convinced just maybe might be able to do for me what I could not do for myself. I doubted it, but maybe. What a miracle maybe is for a guy like me. But I didn't know this was happening. So I get on the druggy buggy. There's like four or five of them. We pile into the church, right? What's the first thing everybody does? Grab a smoke! You know? And of course, litter them all over the church. If you're in a druggy buggy and you're smoking a cigarette, put it in a stinking ash can. Have respect for the church. Listen to me. So we go up to the meeting. And Gary Harbin, I didn't know Gary Harbin, is sitting at the table up in front. And it's a big group. There's probably 150, 60, 170 maybe raw, nasty alcoholics and drug addicts just like me. Bottom of the barrel people. There's one guy in the back, I remember he was spitting on the floor.
You know, I thought, Jesus. So this guy, Gary Harbin, sitting at the table up front, and it was a meeting of something called Back to Basics. I know Jerry's probably familiar with it. So there's a lot of controversy about Back to Basics. We don't have time, nor should we even go there. But it was a way to go through the indoctrination of the steps in 4 weeks. Boom, 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 boom. Now, so it's the first night, and everybody's in the main room. They do the introduction, then they split off into the different. If you're here for week one, first time, stay in the big room. Second week, you go there. Third week here, fourth week there. Boom. So Gary's doing his thing, and I remember he said, all right, everybody. He said, I'm going to ask you a few questions. He says, is there anybody in the room tonight who thinks they need to get sober? And I remember, well, that's a no-brainer. He said, raise your hand. So almost everybody raised their hands, right? And he said, now be honest. If you don't think you need to, don't raise your hand. Ain't nobody looking. And so there were a few holdouts, of course. I think the guy spitting on the floor didn't raise his hand. But almost everybody had their hands raised. He said, now keep your hands up. And he explained why. Just the knowledge of the necessity to get sober is not enough to get sober. And he said something like, because if that was enough, then hell, we'd have our meetings at the Georgia Dome every week. Everybody would get sober. I thought, oh, he's on to something, I think. So I still have my hand up. And he said, everybody keep their hands up. He said, who also believes that they want to get sober? And he said, now think about that, people. And I wasn't so sure. But my hand stayed up. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. My hand was still in the air. Oh, shit. I look around, and a bunch of hands went down. Because, again, he said, please be honest. So a bunch of hands went down. And there might have only been 30 of us left with our hands up. And I remember I thought, I think I really want to. Uh-oh. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm self-conscious because now everybody's looking at you, right? All the other 130 are looking at the 30 with their hands up going, ass kissers. You know how we are, smooching up to the guy at the table, you know. And so he explained why just the desire to get sober is not enough either. We hear an AA a lot, don't we? AA is for the people who want it. Maybe. So anyway, so he said, keep your hands up. So I got my hand up. And then he asked this question. He said, of the people with their hands up, who believes that they're willing to get sober? Uh-oh. And he explained what it meant to be willing. You know, and unfortunately, I don't quite have time, but hopefully I've touched on it some here tonight. He explained what it meant to be willing. And he said, now, people, is that you? Be honest. If you're not willing, put your hand down. And I remember I looked over, and my hand was still up. And I looked up at that table. And I looked around that room, and I was the only guy with my hand up. The only one. I thought, oh boy. And I remember he looked at me from here, about from here to that back door. Close enough we could make eye contact. He looked at me and he goes, really? He said, now wait a minute. You're telling me that you believe you need to get sober, and you actually want to get sober, and you're even willing to get sober. He said, really? Uh-oh. He said, I only got one question for you. And he called me son in front of everybody. I didn't like that very much. He said, I only got one question for you, son. I said, okay. I still have my hand up. He said, you can take your hand down now. I was like, okay, son. Put my hand up. And he said, the question I have for you is, says, why aren't you sober? He had me. He said, you said you needed to, you wanted to, and you're even willing to, but you're not sober. He said, the only logical conclusion any sane person could come to, he said, I don't know. Why aren't you sober? And I didn't have an answer for him. A miracle was occurring, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I wanted to give him an eloquent answer. I wanted to come from the big book. Well, I have a lack of power is my dilemma. I have an allergy to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession so subtly powerful that can't be defeated. That's what I wanted to do. God had other ideas. I had my hand down at that point, but... And I looked up at him, "What do you want from me, pal?" You know? And I even said, I said, "Buddy, I don't know what you want from me." And he goes, "I want to know why you're not sober." He expected me to answer. I mean, he was putting me on blast. Do kids still say that these days?
Yeah.
Put me on blast? He was putting me on blast. And I was like, and finally, out of desperation, really, and being self-esteem, everybody's looking at me. I got 172 eyes on me. I looked at him, I said, "Well, buddy, I guess I just don't know how." Has anybody in this room ever said anything that they wanted to reach out in midair and grab and put back in their mouth? Oh my God. I just admitted in front of everybody that I didn't know something. Oh, I thought I was going to piss down my leg. Scary proposition for a guy like me. And I remember Gary Harbin looked and he went, he said, "No shit." I said, "What?" He said, "That's the only logical conclusion any sane person could come to, is that you just must not know how, or you'd be sober." God bomb, right? I'll never forget, he called me out in front of everybody. This is one of those times when some of my character defects worked in my favor. Pride and ego were in full effect at this point. And he said, "Buddy, I know how." And right in front of everybody, he said, "Poop or get off the pot." He didn't say poop, but you know. He said, "Poop or get off the pot." He said, "Me and you, right over here, after we split up." He called me out in front of everybody. Pride and ego wouldn't let me say what? It wouldn't let me say no. So of course I was like, "You got it, buddy. Me and you, right over there." Oh, shit. So we meet over there, and we go in this little side room, and a guy named Mitch MacArthur. Some of y'all may know Mitch MacArthur, you may not. Wonderful guy. They 12-stepped me, they qualified me for about 45 minutes. They took me through the big book. This is how alcoholics think. Peculiar mental twist. You got that? Yes or no is the only acceptable answer. Yes. You know, the crazy thinking that runs below the surface, parallel with our sound thinking that always wins out in the end. All we don't know what's happening. Oh, God, yes. You know, strange mental blank spots. Everything will seem to be going okay, and I fall through a hole. Yeah, I got that. He said, "Good." I remember I thought, "What's so good about that? That ain't good." And then he took me through the big book where it describes how alcoholics drink. "Do you drink like that?" And he said, "The only acceptable answer is yes or no." Yes. He said, "Good." He said, "Well, then what's wrong with you? What are you, crazy? Are you insane or something?" And I remember I went, "Yes." I wanted to put it back in my mouth again. "Did I just say that?" And I remember he goes, "Good." And I looked at him and I said, "Buddy, I don't know what the hell's so good about that." And he said, "Because at least apparently you're no longer delusional. You're just insane, and I may have a chance to help you." And my gut went ding, 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 ding. And my heart went, "I don't know, I don't know, I don't know." My mind went, uh-uh. And here's the miracle of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. My gut won. Oh, God. He said, "Tomorrow night, you're coming to my front porch. I've already called the halfway house." Judy Harbin, his wife, called Peachford Communities, and they took one of their valuable druggy buggies that they carried 25 people in at a time and carried me and me alone over to Gary Harbin's house. And we started working, taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous immediately. First three steps the first night. Now, it was rough, people. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't some eloquent run through. It was rough. Boom, boom, boom. Yes or no, 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 yes or no. Let's pray. We got on our knees and did the third step prayer. I couldn't believe I was doing this. I had another out-of-body experience. I said, "Oh my God." I'm over here going, "No, dude, what are you doing?" I'm going, "Oh God, what am I doing?" God doing for me what I could not do for myself. The next night, we did a rough four step and a fifth step. I'm 4 days away from a hit of crack and a drink of alcohol, and I'm doing a fourth and a fifth step. Next night, 6, 7, and 8, I had a list of all people I had harmed, and I did the most basic, easiest ones. We started those the next day. He made me pull a credit report to see who I really owed money to. And there was a string of numbers out to the right of each entry. And he goes, "You know what those are?" I said, "Numbers?" He said, "What are they?" I said, "Telephone numbers." He said, "Do you know how to use a telephone?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "You're fully equipped to start making amends." I start calling people. And like the book says, I was arranging the best deal I could. What a miracle. He knew what to do with a guy like me. Don't leave a guy like me too much time to try to think about this deal, to try to figure it out. Because I slide out the back every time. Every time I'm like, I'm gone. Thank God he didn't give me a chance to slide. And I got sober before I even realized it. So if you're waiting around to realize that you're sober to get sober, you're screwed. Just do the work in the book and you'll get sober before you realize it. You have to kind of, Jerry sitting over here going, "Yeah, you got to kind of look back, don't you, Jerry? You got to kind of, holy cow, I've been sober for a while. I didn't even realize it." You with me? I know it's running over. The ninth step promises are fantastic. I love them, but they're the ninth step promises. I didn't know that for years. I thought they were the promises. Are they extravagant promises? You betcha. Are you kidding me? The miracle is they come true if you do the work. So the ninth step promise to say, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I have to get sober first so I can realize it. By the ninth step, I was starting to realize it. But what a miracle this thing is. You know, and I hate to be the guy that says, I got sober and everything's great. But I'm out of time. Everything is great. Everything is great. I have wonderful opportunities to be of service to my family and community, and I do those. I help take care of my dad. He's getting to be a cranky, crotchety old guy, and sometimes it's a challenge. And if I wasn't sober, then I would fall short of the challenge. But I'm sober. God does for me. God takes care of my dad for me. I know it sounds a little weird. What? But here's kind of what it looks like, and I promise you I'll end with this. It had been about 6 months I'd moved in with my dad. I was about maybe 6 years sober. And I don't know about anybody else, about 11 o'clock at night, man, I get hungry. And a bowl of Raisin Bran with a fresh sliced banana in it is fantastic at 11 o'clock at night. Love it. So I made me one. And I ate it. And I went out to the kitchen. I put the bowl in the sink. I went upstairs and went to bed. So I come downstairs the next morning. And now I've interrupted my entire life to come help this guy, right? So I'm halfway down the stairs and my dad says, if you're going to have a bowl of cereal at night, the least you can do is wash it and put it away. And here's what happened. I mean, it happened like this. And this is the thoughts that went through my mind. How dare that old son of a you-know-what say anything to me about a cereal bowl? Doesn't he know who I am? Doesn't he know that I put my entire life on hold to come here and take care of his backside? What is wrong with him? I don't deserve that type of disrespect. I can't believe it. I'm leaving. Screw him. Let him deal with his own ankles. I'm out of here. All that happened like that. And here's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I practiced the 11th step. I paused when agitated or doubtful. And I asked for the right thought or action. And I was able to take a couple of deep breaths. And this is what came out of my mouth. "You got it, Dad. I'll try to do better." What a miracle that is. If I wasn't sober, what would have come out of my mouth is what was in my head. I would have left. My dad and I's relationship would have been severed, at least temporarily, maybe permanently. But what I know today is that it is not, and it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous and God, that my dad and I have a wonderful relationship. I have a wonderful relationship with my mom, and everything in life is better than I ever think I deserve. How arrogant to say that. You know, people say, I'm doing better than I deserve. That's pretty arrogant. Think about it. That statement right there implies that I know what I deserve. That's God's business, not mine. So what I think I deserve. I'm doing better than I think I deserve. So that may change 5 years from now. I may be like, what the hell was I saying from the podium? 10 years from now, I'm going to be thinking, that was a horrible talk. Jerry, take it off the tape.
But for now, it's the best I got, baby. So thank you so much for letting me share. God bless Alcoholics Anonymous.
Amen.